Thank you very much. I'm really glad to be first in our last panel today. I think it will be a little bit summarizing according to everything we have already discussed today. And I will draw a little bit more attention to very specific topics which are in agenda today in Ukrainian media and share some results of empirical studies which I conduct in Ukraine as a part of global research of media transparency. And it's also part of my dissertation research, which I write together with my supervisor, Serhii Kvi, Tetsura Katerina, American professor, and Carlos Lawrence, professor from Barcelona University. To be a little bit brief with the theoretical part, I will just present the normative concept of media transparency to explain how it really is presented in academic literature. Then I will go a little bit more specific about the transformation of media transparency in Ukraine, starting from 1991 and then moving to Orange Revolution and post-Orange Revolution time. As we have already heard a lot about how it really works in Ukraine right now, I will not tell in details about that, but I will be able to answer your questions in case there are some. And finally, I will show how this normative concept of media transparency works in practice and how my qualitative research in Ukraine shows the interpretations and values of our Ukrainian journalists, how they really perceive and understand the main challenges and questions of media transparency in the country. What does media transparency mean? There are a lot of definitions. Actually, if to start with the Latin word, what does transparency actually mean? There are two keywords here, motion, as a moving, and transparency, and pair is like visibility, appear. When something is visible and it is moving through something else, through some channel, it means transparency, actually. In media, transparency is a pretty broad term, which really reflects content of the messages in mass media. It also reflects the movement of this content starting from the source of information, then to media, and then to the public. So all these, you know, chains, all these parts of the huge chains are included into media transparency concept. Kovac, scholar from the United States, writes that transparency actually means how international, how we know what we really know, how journalists get the information, or who are the sources, from which sources he or she gets the information, how direct is the knowledge, and what biases or what sources of non-objectivity can exist, and what are the conflicting accounts between the in the decision of what to cover in his or her material. Media transparency is actually not just media term. I mean, it's not just reflect the practices of media. It is also about public relation activity, and different scholars, especially in the United States, address this question to the PR work as well, how public relations people work. This way here, I give the definition of International PR Association of media transparency and objectivity. How they really write about it is that transparency is a process to diminish the incidence of unethical and illegal practices in the relations between public relations professional and media, so how source of information gives information to the journalists or to the media. In 2004, two American scholars, Dean Krukenberg and Katerina Tetsura, have elaborated the concept of media transparency and have written, based on empirical studies, they have given a kind of three conditions of transparent practices. So to decide that media is transparent, we should understand that this media have competing sources of information. This media, we know really a lot about what is the method of information delivery and what is the sources of funding of media. We have already discussed today the sources of ownership and funding of Ukrainian media. So this question is also topical and crucial for understanding of transparency of media practices in Ukraine and globally. Here's just a theoretical part, how non-transparent practices can influence public opinion and why they're really bad and negative in practice. So you see that they really influence credibility of media as an institution. People actually don't get information, credible information, to make their decisions. It also influences the traditional role of mass media and journalists. So if there are non-transparent practices, journalists are not gatekeepers actually, but they work under the pressures or influences of some other third parties. And for PR professionalism and media professionalism, it's also the question of proficiency and ethics and the professional functions of two professions, not just journalists, but PR practitioners as well. Truth, objectivity, and transparency are the main concepts in this discussion, and they are also addressed in different codes of ethics. Here I quote some of these codes, specifically international ones, which usually regulate and declare that media are to be transparent, journalists are to work without any pressures, financial pressures, physical pressures, censorship as well is prohibited. If to see what kind of ethical regulation we have in Ukraine, we have two codes of ethics, and they also proclaim that media are to be independent, the first code says, and the second says that objective information is important and journalists are not to any rewards or any other influences which could influence their judgment about the coverage. Here is my attempt to show visually how media transparency concept works. It is based on a lot of research which has already been conducted in different countries. You see there are three levels of non-transparency or non-transparent practices. So how actually journalists or media as an organization can be influenced with the sources or other external audience. Direct influences is cash, meal, presence, or other direct payments to journalists, which can influence his coverage. There are three levels. Interpersonal level is when journalist is addressed by news sources on another person, and journalist just gets some present or cash or whatever to cover. Inter-organizational level is a kind of higher level of influences when media organization is influenced through advertiser, for example, and then inside of media organization, marketing or advertising department pressed editorial policy and guides editorial policy in favor or against some kind of, you know, sources. Depends on who actually influenced. And intra-organization level is between two organizations when media organization and source of information can work according to some kind of agreements, which are unofficial sometimes, and when journalists are forced to write and to cover some topics according to these agreements, when owner has an agreement with someone else, or with political party, for example, or with some other friends and business about positive coverage of the events, and in that case, you know, that influences goes between two organizations, so it's inter-organizational level. There are different ways to call non-transparency, and usually it is addressed as cash for news coverage, media bribery, corruption, envelope journalism in Ukraine, in the United States it's also called envelope journalism. Media opacity is like non-transparency. This is a new term which has been elaborated recently. In Ukrainian, we used to call it like Junsa, the term which was offered by non-government organizations, especially during the period when these, you know, non-transparent practices were experienced by the journalists. Junsa means jeans clothes, and there are actually two meanings. I haven't chosen one which would like describe why this term is used. The first one is because jeans clothes has two sides, dark and light. That's why you can never know like if publication looks like black, from other side it can look like white. That's why it's like, you know, two sides of journalism, shadow sides and light side. And another definition, probably because of the pockets, and jeans has usually have pockets, so money can be put in the pocket. That's why jeans and jeans journalism, non-transparent practices. In my paper, I go more specific into the history of non-transparent influences on Ukrainian journalists. I will not address them very in detail here because we have already discussed some of them. The main dates probably here is that in 1991, Ukraine media became independent from state censorship, which used to be during the Soviet time. Then in 1996, the term Junsa began to be used in the discourse. It actually was offered by non-government organizations who decided to counteract these pressures, which happened on different levels, but usually on direct and interpersonal level. The presidency of Leonid Kuchma were the years of Temniki, which has already also been discussed in during our conference today. This is a time of direct censorship or instructions which different media got about the coverage of government. And in 2004, during the Orange Revolution, another revolution, journalistic revolution, also took place. It was actually against the Temniki practice. Journalists decided to refuse this practice. They united together to say no to that practice. Beforehand, the renaissance of the profession has actually started when journalists adopted the first code of ethics, and actually the professional discussions about the values of journalism and non-transparency and objectivity started to be on agenda in Ukraine. Looking at the recent researches on media transparency which are made in the country and globally, I would say that in 2003 in index on media bribery, which is global index, Ukraine was scored really low. It got like 19 place out of 33 countries, which actually were ranked in the index. And our country, Ukraine, took the place together with Taiwan. By the way, Taiwan has already been mentioned today, so we have the same, in 2003, we had the same level of media bribery as Taiwan, Argentina, and Mexico countries. Other experts also said that despite of Orange Revolution and the events of 2004, and despite of the fact that Temniki has gone into the past, other kind of censorships still existed. It was a kind of money censorship and pressure of owner and interorganizational pressure from advertising department, for example. And there are some evidences from the publications of Ukrainian authors who say that advertising department pressed much on the editorial decision. Media sustainability index also reflected that Dinsa overwhelmed media for commercial as well as political reasons. And other research and publications which appeared afterwards, I mean after Orange Revolution, actually indicate the low level of independence of media, even though the practice of Temniki have come into the past. This new word, which is actually used as a censorship of money, I have taken it from some of the publications from Ukrainian experts and analysts. You see that a lot of people after 2004 decided that censorship of money started to exist in Ukraine when oligarchs and owners press media, when private interests are like on the first place, and owner can press media even in case other sides pay to him. So journalists who tried to counteract this practice usually just finished work in Ukraine. I mean, they were like fired, for example. So the practice of pressures still continued in the country, even though the revolution took place, and even though the practice of Temniki was finished. The first attempt to research the situation after Orange Revolution and to indicate what kind of pressures are more popular in the country was a research in which I also took part in Ukraine. It was a survey of Ukrainian journalists and PR practitioners, and we asked them to identify what kind of non-transparent practices in the framework of media transparency are experienced by them. And we actually found out that indirect pressures that happening on inter-organization level are the most frequent in the country. That means that not the practice when journalist himself or herself gets money for coverage, like, you know, direct and interpersonal negotiations, but it usually happens on the higher level when Department of Marketing or media owner presses journalists to cover specific topics. By the way, PR practitioners have also agreed that this topic is very popular, and these practices in which journalists are not involved into individual decision-making process is especially popular. Quotations, for example, Atar Davzhenko, who was one of the panelists of Media Sustainability Index, he also indicated, a journalist and Telecritica journalist, he also indicated that censorship has moved on the level of owners and on the level of departments of marketing and advertising. So these are the cases and the examples how media transparency has gone upper from individual level to intra and inter-organizational levels. What we have today, we have already discussed some problems and challenges and even new kind of censorships which have appeared probably in our country during the Yanukovych presidency. Although this question is not studied very deeply yet, there are some initiatives of non-government organizations and analytical centers who try to investigate what kind of problems Ukrainian journalism has after Yanukovych became a president. Here are the results of Democratic Initiative Foundation named after Ilko Kucherov, which have conducted the research and asked experts, media experts in Ukraine about what are the most topical challenges for transparency in the country. And you see that actually here on the bottom level, I mean on the not on the top, but on the opposite, you know, on the bottom level, media, the most important challenges and problems are described. First of all, media are free from economic pressures, so they are not free, and this point got very, you know, very few answers. So media are dependent on economic pressures, journalists are dependent on owners' pressures, and transparency of media ownership doesn't exist in the country. So these are the main challenges which media experts in the country indicate. They also say that the statement that there is no censorship is wrong. There is a censorship, although this censorship is unofficial, informal in the country. At the same time, some of the government organizations tried to counteract the situation, and we had some initiatives and protests which were journalists initiated in the country. Some of them, Stop Censuri, Stop Censorship Action, actually started in our university in May. We had a kind of conference as well with the leading journalists and media experts. We discussed the problems, and after that, this campaign under censorship started. Artists in Ukraine also supported this action, so you see that there are some protests which have already taken place. Some journalists and TV channels were also brave enough to talk about the pressures which they feel and experience in their newsrooms. For example, STB TV channel have done that, and some other journalists have joined this, you know, campaign to protest and to talk about the problems they have in their profession right now. Here you see the results of some of the of service, and it's actually the content analysis which some of our NGOs have conducted. Telekritika and Internews have conducted the content analysis of TV news and investigated how much news, how many news are biased and non-objective right now. So they tried to see, to show that the National First Channel you see is the first place on the non-objective coverage. The second place is ICTV, so you see what TV channels are blamed in being non-transparent right now in the country. Ukrainians also recognize the decrease of freedom of speech in Ukraine. Here there are the results of two surveys which have been conducted in the country, besides one that has already been mentioned here today. There is another one that Razumkov Center have conducted. It says that 55% of Ukrainians feel that there is a decrease of freedom of speech in the country, and they really are concerned about that. International community is also concerned. During recent months, we have a number of publications and visits from the international organizations in the country and the representatives of European Union, for example. The recent report from Reporters Without Borders says that there is a temptation to control media in the country. Dunya Mijatovic, who visited Ukraine last week, also reported that she marks media self-censorship, and she addresses these problems to the government of Ukraine and pays attention that we should do something with that. The representative of European Commission also says that the situation with non-transparency is not improving in the country, and the government has to pay attention on that. So, summarizing all this mentioned, we should say that the pressures in the country are going up and up, and in this case, the journalists are really not involved into the decision-making process. The main part of the pressures are happening on inter-organizational level, and practitioners, they usually don't make decision about what to cover, and they usually are pressed by marketing department or by owner, and they actually make the editorial policy instead of editors or journalists. Yeah, I'm just finishing. In that case, I'm posing the question, how do journalists perceive their roles and their functions in that circumstances, how they work, and what are their attitudes to these practices? And based on this assumption, I'm currently conducting a kind of qualitative research and trying to see how journalists perceive these practices. And the preliminary results of focus group discussions, which have already been conducted in Ukraine, show that in that case, journalists usually can't really identify the practices as non-transparent. The higher the level of influences go, the less opportunity that they will perceive these practices as non-transparent. So you see here with the green light, with the green color, I show the practices which are perceived as normal and acceptable in Ukraine. These are usually the practices which happens on a higher level than interpersonal one. And the practices which are happening on the interpersonal level are usually perceived as non-acceptable and non-normal. So journalists, when the in the situation when journalists have to make a decision beyond their when the decision about the coverage is made beyond the journalist's decision, I mean when media owner or marketing department decides what to cover and what not to cover, there is a risk that journalists will not perceive this practice as unethical, unacceptable, and even non-transparent. So in this light, I'm trying to investigate what is the kind of social construct of media transparency. So there is a normative concept which says something is allowed and something is not. And I'm interested to see what kind of roles and interpretations journalists imply in their practice and how they understand and explain these practices from their point of view and their experience. If you are interested to learn more about my empirical studies result, we can talk informally, or you can read some of my articles which have already been published. At the moment, I'm on the stage of discourse analysis of focus group discussions results, trying to see how journalists really talk about these pressures, how they perceive their roles. And I guess it's really important to understand what kind of values are working on the level of journal, on the profession, how these values are practiced, and how the media transparency works in practice. I mean, beyond this normative concept, but how it works on bottom level and on grassroots level in Ukrainian media. So thank you for your listening. I'm open to your comments and questions if there are some. Thank you.